Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. We begin on the front page with Illinois politics, Pritzker's approach being put to the test. Rational, pragmatic, progressive agenda facing challenges. This is by Olivia Olander, Dan Petrella, and Jeremy Gorner with the Chicago Tribune. Shortly after wrapping up an inaugural legislative session in 2019 that included hiking the state's minimum wage, legalizing cannabis, and passing an historic $45 billion statewide construction program supported by expanded gambling and a host of increased taxes and fees, Governor J.B. Pritzker sought to reassure a group of Chicago business leaders that he wasn't just another tax and spend liberal. Addressing the Executives Club of Chicago, Pritzker, a billionaire heir to the Hyatt Hotel's fortune and a prominent tech investor, said he would pursue a rational, pragmatic, progressive agenda that ultimately would pay dividends for the state budget and Illinois' economy. I'm a businessman. I'm a progressive. I'm a believer in growing the economy and people's wages, Pritzker said at the time. Now, in his second term and preparing to play host to this summer's Democratic National Convention in Chicago, while also eyeing his own future White House run, Pritzker's identity as a self-described pragmatic progressive is being put to the test. The state faces its most challenging budget outlook since the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic. The governor continues to grapple with controversies over his handling of criminal justice issues, and leaders on both sides of the political divide say Pritzker's approach sometimes falls short of fully addressing the state's biggest problems. The latest assessment of Pritzker's strategy will undoubtedly play out in Springfield in the coming weeks. With March primaries come and gone, work is underway in earnest on approving a state spending plan for the coming budget year before the General Assembly's scheduled May 24th adjournment. The proposal Pritzker laid out in February attempted to build on past progressive successes, such as last year's expansion of state-funded preschool programs, without overpromising and potentially jeopardizing the state's hard-won credit upgrades, a core accomplishment the governor guards jealously. It's a balancing act that's key to Pritzker's political persona as he builds his national profile, and one that will hinge on the governor's ability to satisfy Democratic lawmakers who want more money for their legislative priorities while not resorting to the kinds of budgetary gimmicks that created the state's long-running fiscal instability. Obviously, the governor and his administration carry forward sort of a number of elements of the core progressive banner in terms of policy and program, and there's a part of an identity, said Joe Ferguson, president of the Civic Federation, a nonpartisan budget watchdog. What is not usually coupled with that identity is fiscal responsibility. This sort of fiscal responsibility is a kind of kryptonite against the narrative that would usually come from conservatives. While Pritzker promotes the pragmatic progressive agenda publicly, he also pushes it privately in a February text, to State Representative Jahan Gordon Booth of Peoria, the top budget negotiator for the House Democrats. The governor noted that, quote, almost all of the few new things, unquote, he was introducing in his budget plan were at no cost or very low cost. There is a bunch of stuff focused on the Black Caucus, including addressing maternal mortality, Pritzker wrote to Gordon Booth in the message, obtained through an open records request. But there really isn't room for other spending this year. Indeed, Pritzker's plan both dabbles in progressive priorities, a child tax credit, and a sales tax measure that will skim some funds away from big retailers, while also keeping an annual increase in school funding to the minimum amount required by law and steering clear of more structural tax changes pushed by progressive. A few points the governor made in his proposal seemed tailor-made for bipartisan appeal. A $12 million child tax credit for low and moderate income families, and the elimination of the state's 1% sales tax on groceries. While also popular with Republicans, elimination of the grocery tax has progressive appeal because Pritzker has framed it as an effort to abolish a regressive tax that hits those on the lowest rungs of the economic ladder the hardest. It's also a tax cut that's easier on the state's bottom line in a tight budget year because the revenue from the tax flows not into the state's coffers, but to local governments. The day after Pritzker's budget address in February, State Senator Donald DeWitt, a St. Charles Republican, said he was thrilled Pritzker proposed scrapping the grocery tax, but he said the governor should also be devising a way to ensure local governments don't pass the burden of the lost revenue onto residents. While it's possible Pritzker could be trying to appease the GOP, the proposal doesn't go far enough, DeWitt said. Any opportunity to take stress off of Illinois families is a good thing, said DeWitt, a former mayor of St. Charles who also serves as one of the Senate GOP's budget negotiators. But there are always ramifications that have to be dealt with, and so far, I don't think the administration has been willing to deal with the ramifications of simply removing the tax without considering the other side of that revenue equation, which is the hit that will go to local governments. The Civic Federation still is evaluating the governor's budget proposal, including the idea of eliminating the grocery tax. But Ferguson said it's important to look at the idea in the full context of all the state funds that flow to local governments. You have to do the math on what additionally has been sent to the local level with what is essentially being taken away with the grocery tax and see what it amounts to, Ferguson said. It amounts to a far less dire situation than the localities appear to be projecting. Another idea with the potential to attract Republican support is the child tax credit. But both DeWitt and some progressives find themselves in the odd position of agreeing with each other in supporting the idea, but also thinking it could be more ambitious. The governor has allocated $12 million for this, and that just doesn't get you very far, said State Representative Will Guzzardi, a Chicago Democrat who co-chairs the House Progressive Caucus. Democratic State Senator Mike Simmons of Chicago has introduced a more robust tax credit than the one pitched by Pritzker. It could cover families with children up to age 17 rather than age 3. Negotiations for the credit as well as the rest of the budget are ongoing. It was a win that the governor put this in his budget. It allows us to have this discussion at another level, Simmons said. Several of the governor's belt-tightening measures, from increasing school funding by the bare minimum to cutting back on state-funded health care for immigrants who are in the country without legal permission, have drawn scrutiny from his political left. While Pritzker speaks frequently about the importance of education funding and brags about boosting funding for elementary and high schools by more than $1.4 billion since taking office, the reality is that he's only kept up with the minimum target of increasing state funding by $350 million per year. Advocates have long warned that these increases are not enough to meet the state's goals of adequately funding public schools under a state aid formula signed into law in 2017 by his predecessor, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Failing to go above the minimum increase has been a long-running source of frustration for Representative Will Davis, a Democrat from South Suburban Homewood, who was one of the sponsors of the 2017 school funding overhaul and chairs the House Appropriations Committee that oversees K-12 funding. We tried to put a trajectory out there to try to get full funding, and the reality, I don't think we'll ever actually get to that, said Davis, who for years has pushed for at least a $500 million increase annually. But we have to make bigger strides to at least show that we're trying to get to what we would call full funding. Although, Davis notes, the education funding formula was crafted when Rauner, not Pritzker, was in office. The Democratic lawmaker said that doesn't alter his overall message to Pritzker. Governor, why not work with us? Let's make sure that we find that resources so that we can ramp up the funding in a different way, Davis said a few days after Pritzker pitched his budget. Tensions between Pritzker's progressive ideals and his pragmatic approach also have arisen over state-funded health insurance for older Illinois residents who are in the country without legal permission. The debate over how to deal with ballooning costs in the program delayed passage of the state budget last year. A dispute between Democratic factions, including Black and Latino lawmakers, and moderates and progressive, that was only resolved when Pritzker agreed to a deal that gave his administration the power to rein in the program's costs. His moves to close enrollment for younger participants begin charging copays, and more recently, to stop offering the program to green card holders who are in a 5-year waiting period for federal Medicaid benefits, have drawn the ire of immigrant rights and healthcare advocates and some progressive lawmakers. Last month, for example, Representative Norma Hernandez, a Democrat from Melrose Park, elected in 2022, with the backing of progressive stalwart U.S. Representative Jesus Chuy Garcia, criticized the latest move as a short-term cost-saving measure, not a long-term solution. In his proposal, Pritzker suggested spending on the program from the state's general fund be reduced to $440 million, which was $110 million less than what was committed this fiscal year. But the administration is also proposing spending nearly $200 million more on the program from other funding sources, with much of that money coming from a federal match to emergency services funding. The maneuvers have created some dissonance between Pritzker's actions and political rhetoric. In a news release touting the expansion of eligibility to those ages 42 to 54 in 2022, he declared, "From day one of my administration, equity has been and will always be our North Star. Everyone, regardless of documentation status, deserves access to holistic health care coverage." In the longer term, some progressives are looking for additional moves that would bring in more revenue from the richest Illinoisans and large corporations, Guzzardi said. A tax change for retailers was one example that made it into the proposed budget, Guzzardi told us. Pritzker proposed capping the money retailers can keep from sales taxes, essentially resulting in higher taxes for those businesses and more revenue for the state. Beyond that, progressives have other ideas about how we could grow the pie, Guzzardi said. The governor's introduced budgets don't include those ideas, that's true. But working within the framework of the dollars that we have, I think the governor has done a really strategic job of investing those dollars in our shared progressive priorities, he said. Since Pritzker's boldest progressive proposal to change the state's tax structure, a state constitutional amendment to create a graduated rate income tax, was resoundingly defeated at the ballot box in 2020, thanks in large part to efforts by the state's business community, the governor has focused on more arcane ways of boosting state tax revenue. Aside from the retailer sales tax change for next year, an idea that's been proposed and rejected previously, Pritzker is also suggesting limiting an inflation-based increase in the personal income tax exemption, essentially increasing taxes on individuals by $93 million. The state budget isn't the only arena in which Pritzker at times has had to triangulate his progressive policy positions with pressures from the political center and the right. Recent tumult at the State Prisoner Review Board brought the spotlight back on the Pritzker-controlled institution that decides which state prisoners are paroled. The makeup of the Prisoner Review Board has changed noticeably during Pritzker's time in office, early on being labeled by Republicans as too liberal, and later being criticized by some prisoners' rights and criminal justice reform advocates for taking too hard of a line and preventing older inmates from getting the paroles they sought, moves conservatives applauded. But in March, the review board became a focus yet again when parolee Crosetti Brand was charged with stabbing 11-year-old Jaden Perkins to death and seriously injuring his mother, with whom Brand used to be in a relationship. Released on parole in October for a separate crime, Brand was back in state custody in February after he allegedly tried to break into the residence where Jaden and his mother lived. But a three-member review board panel decided to release Brand after determining the panel didn't have enough evidence from Jaden's mother's allegations to keep him behind bars. Days after the attack made headlines, the board's chairman, Donald Shelton, and another member resigned. In announcing one of the resignations, Pritzker said it was clear that evidence in this case was not given the careful consideration that victims of domestic violence deserve, and suggested reforms could be made to the way the board functions. For Pritzker, the resignation should be a feather in his cap, showing that he's willing to admit there was a grave mistake within an agency that falls under his purview, said Christopher Mooney, an emeritus professor of political science at the University of Illinois at Chicago. But Mooney also said that the board's actions in the Brand case could entice Republicans or any other detractors to politicize Jaden's death and use it against Pritzker if he tries to run for president. It's been done before, Mooney said, referring most notably to the 1988 presidential election when Republican George H.W. Bush used the early release of Willie Horton, a Massachusetts murderer who went on to commit other crimes, to paint Democrat Michael Dukakis as soft on crime. Already, Senate Republicans have used Jaden's death against the governor. Illinois Senator Jason Plummer, a Republican from Edwardsville who sits on the Executive Appointments Committee, blamed Pritzker in two lengthy social media threads about the board's shortcomings, criticisms he echoed at a news conference and in an appearance on Fox News. Although Pritzker called for additional training for review board members on how to handle cases where domestic violence is involved, the Senate Republicans are pushing for broader changes. Their proposal includes requiring that appointees to the board have 20 years of experience in the criminal justice system as a prosecutor, criminal defense attorney, judge, probation officer, or public defender. The GOP plan would also require victims be immediately notified of a prisoner's release under certain circumstances and increase transparency requirements for the board. While Senate Republicans were previously successful in 2022, when crime was a key campaign issue, both statewide and nationally, in pressuring Democratic colleagues to oppose a couple of Pritzker's appointments to the board, it's unclear whether the GOP's superminority will be successful again. But Mooney and other observers have questioned how effective the Republicans will be. As it stands right now, it doesn't sound like it's going to go very far, Mooney said, the day after the board's resignations were announced. Number one, because Pritzker is all over it. In more local and state news, we have in Names and Faces, we have Heartland Community College recognized Phil Vandiver and Laura Coughlin with 2024 Outstanding Faculty Awards. Vandiver is the recipient of the Full-Time Faculty Award, and Coughlin is the recipient of the Part-Time Faculty Award. Each year, a part-time and full-time faculty member are selected for the awards from student nominations. The HCC recipients are also submitted to the Illinois Community College Trustees Association for the statewide award. Vandiver has taught digital media communication for more than 20 years at HCC, a program he created. This was the first program at Heartland to deliver content to studios via video lectures before it became standard. Throughout his time at Heartland, Van Diver has served as faculty advisor for the college's chapters of the Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society and Skills USA, helped present student film festivals, and led to the development of a faculty mentoring program. He currently serves as the program coordinator for digital media, serving as the chair of the assessment committee for two terms and serving on various college committees and boards. Coughlin is an adjunct professor of anatomy and physiology and has taught at HCC for 4 years. She has 24 years of experience as a licensed physical therapist and administrator. She holds a master's degree in physical therapy from Touro College, an MBA from the University of St. Francis, and a bachelor's degree in biology from Drake University. Both recipients will be recognized during the HCC Board of Trustees meeting on April 16th. The University of Illinois Extension, serving Livingston, McLean, and Woodford counties, is offering the Giving Garden program this spring for the fourth year. Participants will receive free materials, including seeds, plants, and education, when they pledge to donate 50% of their garden harvest to a community member in need. Every gardener in the community is welcome to participate, whether they have an acre or a single container to grow. Illinois Extension staff will provide monthly educational newsletters via email to help community gardeners grow a healthy, productive garden. This year, Illinois Extension will offer 200 vegetable and 200 cut flower giving garden kits. Those who wish to participate can make the pledge at go.illinois.edu/givinggarden. Program materials will be distributed the week of May 6th at the Livingston, McLean, and Woodford County Extension offices. For more information, contact Brittany Haig at 309-663-8306. Connect Transit announced the bus service will not charge fare to passengers on Monday, April 22nd, in honor of Earth Day. This includes all Connect Transit, Connect Mobility, and Connect Flex vehicles. In a statement Monday, Connect Transit said it is operating without fare on Earth Day to give the community the opportunity to lower their household carbon footprint by using the bus to attend events throughout the Bloomington Normal area. Visit connect-transit.com or call 309-828-9833 for up-to-date information. And Robert Chanik with the Chicago Tribune writes, Oberweis Dairy files for bankruptcy. Oberweis, a century-old Illinois dairy with a recent history of Republican political aspirations by its owner, is seeking Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The family-owned dairy, which has dozens of ice cream stores and shelf space in grocery stores across the Midwest, owes more than $4 million to its 20 largest unsecured creditors, according to the bankruptcy filing Friday in Chicago. Bartlett-based Italian food service company Greco & Sons is listed as the largest unsecured creditor at more than $721,000 owed, according to the filing. Oberweis Dairy also owes the Cook County Treasurer more than $173,000. Started in 1915 when Peter Oberweis, an Aurora dairy farmer, began selling extra milk to his neighbors out of a horse-drawn wagon, the enterprise became Oberweis Dairy in 1930, according to the company's origin story posted on its website. Oberweis opened its first ice cream store in 1951 in Aurora. It has since grown to more than 40 locations that include Bloomington and Champaign, as well as the Chicago area, Northwest Indiana, Michigan, and St. Louis. Oberweis dairy products include old school bottled milk are also available in grocery stores throughout the Midwest. In 1997, it opened a new production facility and headquarters in North Aurora. Joe Oberweis, the youngest son of Republican politician Jim Oberweis, became the fourth generation leader of the family-owned business in 2007. On a message Monday, Jim Overweis said he is no longer at the helm of the dairy business. I left about a year ago and am not involved, he said. Adam Kraber, who is listed as Overweis Dairy's president on the bankruptcy filing, did not respond to a request for comment on Monday. The Overweis name became synonymous with more than milk in the new millennium when Jim Overweis, chairman of the dairy and grandson of its founder, launched a string of high-profile but failed bids for Illinois political office as a Republican candidate. Jim Overweis, who lives in Sugar Grove, ran unsuccessful campaigns for U.S. Senator in 2002, 2004, and 2014 when he won the Republican nomination but lost to longtime incumbent Democrat Dick Durbin. He lost the Republican primary for governor in 2006 and came up short in two bids for U.S. Congress, falling in 2020 to Democratic incumbent Lauren Underwood in the 14th Congressional District. The dairy magnate did win a seat as an Illinois state senator in 2013 for the 25th District, where he served as Republican spokesperson for the Labor and Commerce Committee. Overweis left his state Senate seat in 2021. And in the public safety report, we have police are investigating a report of shots fired Sunday in Normal. Brad Park, Community Services Officer for the Normal Police Department, said officers were called at 7:47 p.m. Sunday to the gunfire report at Wiley Drive and Javi Avenue. Park said investigators confirmed shots had been fired and found a vehicle that had been struck by the gunfire. No injuries were reported and no arrests have been made. No suspect information was immediately available on Monday. A 44-year-old woman is accused of battering an officer at the McLean County Detention Facility in Bloomington. According to an affidavit provided to the Pantograph by the McLean County State's Attorney's Office, Tywana M. Johnson was being placed in a cell when she punched an officer in the hand. She is charged with aggravated battery of an officer, a Class 2 felony. She was in custody on an unrelated misdemeanor offense. Johnson, whose last registered residential address was in Milwaukee, was released Monday on the charges. She's scheduled to be back in court April 26th for an arraignment on the felony matter. And 44-year-old Bloomington man facing a felony charge after authorities said he threw food at a jail officer. Christopher A. Irwin is charged with aggravated battery of an officer, a Class 2 felony. Charging documents provided to the Pantograph by the McLean County State's Attorney's Office said an officer at the McLean County Detention Facility was collecting food trays when Irwin tried throwing his tray out of his cell, but he only forced the food off the tray. The arrest affidavit said Irwin covered the guard's pants, belt, and boots in food. As of Monday morning, Irwin remained in custody at the jail pending a hearing to determine his custodial status. An arraignment is scheduled for April 26th. And with that, I conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will be back shortly to read Part 2.